the Murray-Darling Basin covers about 14% of the Australian mainland, running from Queensland down through New South Wales, Victoria to South Australia. What's interesting about it is it's Australia's largest river system, but compared to other river systems in other parts of the world, it's not, obviously not a very wide river. It's a very arid environment and it's remarkably flat. So what that means is that when there are great flooding rains in the north of the system around New South Wales, Queensland, and that water starts flowing down the river, it can spread across an enormous area of the floodplain. That's about 5.8 million hectares of wetland ecosystems across the Murray-Darling Basin. And towards the end of the basin, when you get closer to South Australia, it's an incredibly flat landscape. The other thing to know about the Murray-Darling Basin river system is Australia was originally an inland sea. So there's a lot of salt in the soil, and all that salt needs to be flushed out into the ocean. Otherwise, you end up with a situation where you have higher salinity sort of slowly creeping up the river from the mouth of the river in South Australia. And that starts to affect everything from whether or not you can grow crops to the health of the ecosystems. So that's why it's extremely important to flush the water fully out of the system. And of course, if we've mismanaged the Murray-Darling and that water can't be flushed out, then the salt can't be flushed out. And that's why when you hear some people say, oh, we're irrigating the Southern Ocean, they're just not understanding that we need to get the salt out of the system or we're in trouble in decades to come.
And it struck me when I was reading the report that we're here to talk about, Doomed Without a Drink, what's happening is that the different states are not looking at the river system as a whole. They're looking at it from the point of view of the overlay of the boundary, state boundaries. They're looking at it from the point of view of their economic interests, not as a river system.
That's right. And that's been the problem with managing the Murray-Darling Basin throughout Australian history. I mean, if you look at it from the beginning, obviously in the same way that land was stolen from First Nations, the water was stolen. So it was assumed that the water was just up for grabs, and then the Australian states were set up. At the time, they probably couldn't imagine that society would have the power to wreck an entire ecosystem. And everybody just took what they could. They made important changes to the river that allowed for agriculture and for human society to exist. So we shouldn't sort of, obviously that's important because they needed to create more regular sources of water. But there was no system-wide way of managing the river for a very long time. And it led to some huge algal blooms in the Millennium Drought. And that led to the federal government under John Howard creating the Water Act. And the intention of that was to take over management of the Murray-Darling Basin system from the states, because states like Victoria and New South Wales in particular had been allocating too much water from the river to irrigation. And as a result, during dry years, there was the beginning of the collapse of the ecosystem.
Your organisation actually says that Victoria's current position on water policy in the basin is closer to that of Barnaby Joyce than a progressive Labor government. That's quite strong words, aren't they?
Yes, and unfortunately it's true, because the policy that the Victorian government has maintained for about 10 years was put in place during a period when Victoria had a coalition government and the National Party had the water portfolio, and it hasn't really changed. It's worth sort of going through the background. So what happened was that after the Water Act was created and then the Basin Plan was created, and sort of during that period, Penny Wong, who was in the federal government at the time, started buying a lot of water, and some of that came out of Victorian areas because those water entitlements are higher reliability. Water that comes down through the Goulburn, for example, that was quite a bit of that was bought up. And so people in those areas were upset by that. Then as a result, the Victorian government took this position against Commonwealth water purchases. And that position has existed for quite a long time. And the repercussions of that are that the alternatives to purchasing water, to recover water for the environment, are not very efficient or cost effective, and may in fact have like repercussions. They're not actually delivering water to the environment. They may actually increase the amount of water that irrigators use through a rebound effect, which I won't go into. But essentially, the Victorian government has maintained that position that they had under the National Party for a long time.
Actually, I want to go into some of those things that you're talking about, because the Victorian government's been quite weasel-wordily about it, in the sense that I wanted to talk about things like failed offset projects and this floodplain engineering projects, these grand names, and even things like some policies built around socio-economic tests. I mean, these are really they're policies that are actually delaying tactics around and obscuring the need to save the river.
Oh, absolutely. And it's worth starting with a broad view, because sometimes describing what's going on in water policy is so technical that it puts people off. So I'd like to sort of start with a broad overview and then move into those details. Looking at it from a big picture perspective, the Murray-Darling Basin Plan was intended to restore the river system to health. And in the legislation, it says it should be based on the best available science. So that's actually a quote from the legislation. And what happened, unfortunately, was that it wasn't based on the best available science. It was based on a political compromise, and the amount of water that is in the plan is far lower than what's required to restore those ecosystems to health. And the total amount of water is 3,200 gigalitres. That's 3,200 billion litres. Gigalitres is billion litres. And that's water to be returned to the environment on an annual basis. So it essentially means that irrigators and other human uses have 3,200 billion litres less per year on average to return to the river. But that's not how it's worked in practice, because there've been additional schemes put on top of that. So, for example, what you're referring to with the offset schemes is called sustainable diversion adjustment mechanism. And the intention of that is, instead of returning water to the environment, they have found a way to say that you can achieve the same environmental equivalence by placing infrastructure on floodplains, so that less water is used for the environment, but it can be pumped into wetlands or other floodplain areas. And that's a justification for not buying the water and returning it to the environment. So it's an offsetting process, essentially.
And even the thing about irrigation, that really made me angry. The idea that they give money to basically they're subsidizing what are large businesses, agribusinesses, to maintain their irrigation systems, pretending that they're saving water. And we're just paying with public money for these big businesses to have irrigation systems.
Yeah, you can see how it
It's really
works
outrageous.
in a political sense, right? So they said, look, the irrigators are using water. If we upgrade their pipes and other irrigation infrastructure, they'll use less water, and those water savings could be counted towards the environment. But it hasn't worked that way for a
Oh,
couple of
surprise,
reasons.
surprise.
Well, one is that any water that was previously lost during irrigation, in other words, water that leaked, that water would have returned to the environment through return flows. So it would have, if it leaked out of a channel or an irrigation pipe, theoretically, it would have gone back into the river system at some point. And so that's not accounted for. Irrigation becomes more efficient, but those savings unaccounted for. The second one is that, as with most environmental things, there's a rebound effect. So to give an example, if you buy a more efficient appliance, you're more likely to use it, and therefore your overall electricity use is higher. That's pretty well established in the environmental academic literature. It's called the rebound effect, and it often applies to any attempt to increase efficiency. And so you have the same issue with increasing efficiency for irrigation. Farmers, if they can irrigate more efficiently, they tend to buy more water. They can possibly even use more water overall because they get more value out of each megaliter of water. And so there have been studies that have shown that these on-farm efficiency projects can actually push up the price of water more than buying the water directly, because farmers are willing to pay more for water if they can use it more efficiently. So there's problems with them, and they're not straightforward. Essentially, if you want to make it sort of easier to understand for your listeners, because one of the problems is it gets so complex that it really just turns the public off.
Let's go back now. We're getting a picture of the human manipulation and economic imperatives, so we can understand that. But we're worried about the river, right? And Doomed Without a Drink tells us quite clearly that the approach that the Victorian government's taking is threatening 140 species with extinction. This includes iconic species such as the Murray cod.
Yeah, that's right. And we wanted to draw attention to this because whenever there's a debate about water in Australia, you have some very loud interest groups in Parliament and across the country making a lot of noise. And what gets forgotten is all the animals and plants that need this water to survive. I mean, for them, this is actually a matter of life or death. They don't their future survival is dependent on adequate environmental flows in rivers and wetlands. And in fact, some of their needs for breeding, reproducing can only be met in the current highly regulated river system by environmental flows, which means water that's being bought by the Commonwealth or a state and then is sent down the river and across floodplains and wetlands to help those species. So by denying the river those environmental flows, by blocking the Commonwealth from purchasing more water, the Victorian government is actually increasing the extinction risk for those species because they are dependent on on that flowing water. That's the environment that they need to sustain themselves.
In fact, it was very interesting to read your report to actually look at the case studies, because it makes it clear that the way humans operate is much too simple, and rivers and nature are far more complicated. So
Yes.
all those different species, and the way water operates over a wide flowing floodplain at different times of the year has a big effect on the different species' ability. And we're talking about grasses, and we're talking about birds, and we're talking about fish and frogs. They all require, even down to one of the frogs no longer being able to breed because dirt is now filling up the little gaps that they would normally be brushed away by the water. They can no longer find places to breed.
Yeah, this is a theme that you see across a range of environmental issues, that ecosystems are incredibly complex. Animals and plants have evolved to certain conditions over a very long time. And then in the last couple of hundred years, especially with European colonization of places like Australia, we've come in, we've drastically altered those ecosystems. And then in the last, 50 years, we've tried to correct for the damage that we've caused, but our corrections are too simplistic because it is an incredibly complex system. And so, we're now in a situation where we have a regulated river, and that's necessary. We need to get water to towns. We do need to grow food. But we also want to keep these species alive and keep these incredible native animals alive. And we have to find clever ways of both delivering water for human use and getting water to the right places at the right times, at the right depths, all these things, for each species. You know, it's become so complex, whereas previously, in that natural system, things would have happened naturally, and the animals had adapted to that over a very long time. So yeah, we're in a tricky situation where we need to know enough about the species to be able to meet their needs for their survival and their reproduction, and we have to get the water to certain places at certain times in order to do that.
Well, it's interesting too that it's not just a life and death question. I mean, that's it. But also, and it's not just an environmental Victoria's wish list. The Victorian government has actually got legislation that requires it to actually be protecting species actively.
Yeah, that's right. They do, and a lot of state governments do. The federal government does. I think there's often lip service paid to that those obligations around biodiversity. You know, people say that we don't want any further extinctions, and they might. And there are a range of recovery plans and action statements and a whole lot of government documentation about how they're going to save X species. But then they're still making decisions, allowing, you know, development that would threaten the habitat of those species. So it often falls down at the point where key decisions are made. We don't prioritise the environment.
Well, the reason for why you've brought out this report right now is because next month there's going to be a Murray-Darling Ministerial Council meeting, and this is a do or die time, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. So the Basin Plan has been going for 10 years. The Basin Plan is essentially the federal plan that we have to restore our rivers to health. It should largely be an environmental plan. That's the purpose of the Water Act. It's largely environmental. And everything's coming to a head because the additional water for the environment is supposed to be delivered by June next year. It's way behind. The latest estimate that I've seen is about 4 gigalitres of the 450 gigalitres is on track to be delivered, so it's way behind. And the decisions are going to be made in the next month or two, because if they're going to change the legislation, they have to do it this year. They have to go through federal parliament, which means that the negotiations must be happening right now. So if we're going to save these species and make sure that they get enough water for their needs, then we have to raise our voices right now. That's why we're putting out this report and asking everybody to make some noise and put some pressure on the Victorian government.